You are listening to Art Focus on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM. I'm your host, Amanda Clem, and today I'm talking with artist and curator Steph Little Bird Fogle about the exhibition This is Kalapuyan Land and its many iterations, as well as their practice and other good things. So thanks so much for being on the program with us today, Steph.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you letting me come on and chat with you.
It's really great. So I'm excited because this exhibition, This is Kalapuyan Land, is one that you made last year for the Five Oaks Museum, which is formerly the Washington County Museum at PCC Rock Creek. So it's recently undergone a change of administration and management. And so, Steph, I was curious to know, a little bit, can you please tell us about your background and then leading up to how you got connected with Five Oaks Museum?
Yeah, so my background is I'm a fine artist and also a professional writer. And I am also a member of the Grand Ronde Confederated Tribes of Oregon. I'm a descendant of the Kalapuyan people. And so I have been, you know, I have been myself and making this work for many years as a Indigenous artist. I've been making work about my existence and about my heritage ever since I can remember. And that has established my own sort of reputation, I'm sure, through the artist community here in Portland. And so because of that, I met the co-director, Molly, prior to them becoming the co-director on another project that we worked on for the Art Science Initiative way back, I think it was like in 2015 or something. So, you know, basically had just worked on a project with the co-director prior to this and just basically become fast friends. And when they became the co-director of the Washington County Museum, basically started asking me to come and look at their pre-existing exhibition about my tribe, because Molly, I think, had an inkling from the start that it was problematic. Yeah. And sort of wanted to bring me in and take a look at it.
Yeah, so the Washington County Museum and now Five Oaks Museum is a historical museum, so it is many artifacts collected from stolen property, you know, throughout the years. And so the their cornerstone, like, permanent exhibition was called This Kalapuyan Land. So that's kind of what I'm loving to hear more about, your take on that. The artifacts and your show that you remade for the museum also includes new artifacts. And so I was hoping you could talk to us a little bit about the collection, like what the collection included in terms of items, and then what you added to it. And then I would also love to hear about the explication that you remade, you heavily edited, and the text panels too for the show. So those are two things I would love to cover.
Yeah, so when I first came to the exhibition in its sort of pre-existing form, it was what you might imagine a traditional historical exhibition to be like, very boring, basically.
Yeah.
Just lots of text on panels in sepia tone, and then lots of, you know, clear pedestal cases with stone, you know, mortar and pestles and other, you know, arrowheads or hatchets, things of that nature. So very much like a very narrow look at our culture from a historical perspective, but no real information about our tribe as it was in the contemporary time of the first iteration of the exhibition, which was about 15-ish years ago. So when they brought me in to look at the exhibition, I said, well, you know, the first thing that calls out to me is this exhibition talks about us like we don't exist anymore, and it makes it feel like you know, the members of the Kalapuyan people are no longer here, they're no longer in your community. And so for me, it was important to sort of reinvigorate the exhibition in many ways, and one of the ways that we did that was by incorporating contemporary fine artists and also just contemporary indigenous artists who may not identify as a fine artist necessarily, but I put them in that category.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, the institution sort of excludes us by nature. So,
can you,
it's upending that institution.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of like what type of art object that you're elevating, even though it might not have been intended?
Yeah, so I mean, everything in that show, there's things that really touch on tradition. Like there are, you know, pieces of beadwork in there. There are handmade moccasins, but there are also, you know, handmade journals, and there are contemporary paintings that you might not necessarily, you wouldn't go, oh, that's a Native American painting. And I think that's also important too, is presenting work that doesn't like fall into visual stereotypes, so that the viewer is challenged to see us as contemporary and not just as conforming to what we are seen as historically.
Yeah, that actually is a really good segue to the one of the most major changes that right off the bat, which is the exhibition title name. It was called This Kalapuyan Land, and you added the very important is to remind people that this is very much a current situation, never not been. So yeah, can you talk a little bit about that, like some small changes like that in language and when you're editing the text panels that create like a really significant impact on a viewer's understanding of the process? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so outside of, like, as a curator, you're usually responsible for recruiting artists and sort of figuring out how the show will be presented and promoted. But on top of those responsibilities, I also was responsible for curating the information that was on those pre-existing panels. And so basically, I kind of took a nod from my own work as a writer and, an editor. And so I went through and I edited those panels for errors, for historical inaccuracies, for outright misrepresentations. All kinds of things in those panels were wrong, even though they were created by perceived historical experts. And those experts, unfortunately, didn't really, they didn't consult with Indigenous people or Indigenous historians like David Lewis, who I worked with on the exhibition. He's also a Grand Ronde tribal member, but he is a professor and historian of our tribal lineage here in Oregon and also Washington. He's an amazing resource. So, the museum originally consulted him at the very end of the making of the exhibition, and he gave them quite a bit of feedback, but they never incorporated that feedback. So part of my work was rectifying that error in interaction that this museum had previously had with an Indigenous person, and trying to incorporate the corrections that he had made in a letter 15 years ago that I actually had access to. So it was really cool. It was a way for me to go through and not only show the museum where it maybe could do better, but also to right some wrongs that had just happened within that institution as well, and try to make good on some promises, I think. So, for me, it was a neat opportunity to incorporate my own personal, like, family knowledge of what I know as an Indigenous person who grew up in Oregon with family members who went to the, Indian schools and were indoctrinated basically in those schools, and to sort of correct some of the representations of those things in the panels. So for me, it was not only a correction of history just broadly, but also a correction of familial history and ancestral sort of, erasure, I guess, would be the right word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is upsetting to think that so-called professional in the field would not consult the people themselves, especially given that it's a local institution. And I know right now is a lot of institutions are trying to come to terms with the fact that their collections were all stolen and to think about what to do about that and how to represent it. And so I love that the Five Oaks, directors are so open to handing over the narrative completely because giving it back to where it should be. And so that does seem like a really exciting opportunity to be a part of and like a good example to be leading for hopefully other institutions.
Yeah, and their commitment to sort of decentering themselves, one as an institution, but somehow also them as people who are white and perceived as experts because they are, you know, directors of a museum, giving that power to marginalized communities, to artists of marginalized communities, to give them platforms or even just a place of the museum to present their work in an authoritative way when we aren't necessarily always seen that way. That's when you say, oh, it's weird that they wouldn't consult us about our own story, but most experts in the fields that study indigenous people actually don't see us as experts on ourselves. So, you know, that's unfortunately something that is, you know, needs to be rectified. But that museum is doing such great work in terms of decentering themselves as the authority and handing that over to other people. And there are shows that are upcoming on gender euphoria as well as the history of Hawaiians here in Oregon, I think, is really important for the community to know about because Oregon's history is very rich and a lot of it has been hidden and buried under white supremacy, unfortunately. And so I think that this museum is doing a great job of like owning up to that and also being willing to open themselves up to critique, which most institutions, particularly fine art or historical institutions, have a very difficult time doing typically.
Yeah. So I love the decision to leave your annotated text panels as completely edited annotated panels instead of a clean copy with it, the edits included, so that folks can visit and see, you know, the mistakes that were made in the past by the administration, and you know how they were correcting it, how they're owning up to that. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think that it's different. Like you said, it's different than it would be if they just got rid of all the old panels and pretended like they didn't exist. But I think there is much more powerful sort of juxtaposition when you can see the errors next to the corrections. And in terms of the audience that's coming through that museum, a lot of them are students. And so that was a really powerful way to sort of illustrate to them that, one, when you go into an institution, whether it be a museum or even when you're looking at a textbook as an institution of thought, like, you shouldn't necessarily trust every word that you see because, you know, it may not be accurate. It's written by people with biases, and those people can be perfectly fine people. They just may have biases that infect their ability to sort of perceive reality, unfortunately. And so, you know, we all have to be more critical thinkers. And so for me, I think that's a great way to show it without having to like force feed somebody. You can kind of just see it for yourself. It's right there in black and white, as opposed to covering it up and pretending like it didn't happen so that we can't really learn from it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So do you have any, do you have any teaching experience? Are you an educator in that way?
I have done teaching. I love to interact with students. I always try to do it in like the least formal way possible because I see how constrained traditional teachers have become. And it was something that I imagined myself doing when I was younger. And then I just saw the reality of teaching as it is today. And it's unfortunate they are so underappreciated. They're also really restricted as to what they can even say or do in their classrooms from day to day. So I love to be the person that the teacher brings in and gets to, like, you know, sort of share these things that they're probably in some ways not really allowed to share if it's not a part of the prescribed curriculum or those things. So I also just love to interact with students because a lot of them haven't interacted with Indigenous people. And so students, younger students tend to think of us as being in the past in the way that we are taught in schools as though we don't exist. And so a lot of them don't realize that we exist amongst them in their communities. You know, one of the questions that we've gotten was, you know, do Native Americans have cell phones? No, that kind of illustrates that, you know, the way that they're being educated in their schools is teaching them that we're not around anymore. And so that's why the contemporary art aspect of the show becomes so important. And also the edits to those panels to let you know that there's someone here, there's someone still here who's checking on this history. And so, you know, it's evidence that we still are around. And that's really important, particularly when you're talking about teaching empathy to new generations to see, you know, be kind to those around you, no matter how they look or where they come from. And so if you think that no one, that these people don't exist anymore, then it's harder to empathize with them than if you know they're your neighbor. So, you know, that's really my ultimate goal, is just to remind people that we exist in the community still.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And it's crazy to think that people's education like stops at the sepia color photo from the 1800s. So yeah, what can you tell us a little bit? Tell us about maybe one or two pieces in the show that so I know it's not obviously on view at the moment in person, but you can our listeners can go online and look at the show. There's like a really good documentation on the website. But can you just describe maybe a piece or two that you really love from the contemporary bringing in?
Yeah, so one of my favorite painters of all times is someone who is a native painter from Oregon. He's actually, his tribe is from the Hoopa tribe in California, and he is a longtime educator at the Chemawa Indian School in Salem, and his name is Don Bailey. And Don Bailey makes these incredible, huge, like massive, large-scale paintings of indigenous life in contemporary terms, but also there's a lot of like political stuff rolled in there, you know, related to capitalism or those things that are affecting indigenous people still to this day. He also just does just really beautiful historical studies of photographs taken of our tribes when they initially came here and settled. So he is just an incredible painter, and he's in Portland making amazing work all the time. And honestly, I feel like he is a legend in the making. Mm-hmm. And honestly, was just honored to have a piece of his in the show.
Yeah.
And then also, I was very lucky to meet two people who, a daughter and her mother, Carol Haskins and Nicole Haskins, who are both Grand Ronde members. And Carol Haskins is an elder in our tribe, and she is also like this amazing creator. I just say that because she makes all kinds of stuff, but a lot of what was in the show from her was traditional regalia, beadwork, you know, just all kinds of things that she had made by hand. And then her daughter Cole is like the complete opposite of like what we would think of as traditional work. Cole makes very macabre sort of paintings that reference, in some cases are referencing like ancient, you know, native tales, or are referencing her own characters that she makes, but they're so different from her mom's, but to me, they still represent tradition. And to have both of them in the show as like two generations representing their creative sort of practice was, to me, really powerful, and also a great way to sort of honor, you know, my fellow tribal members as well, and give them space in this institution, which normally doesn't even see us, you know. They don't make space for us in a lot of the museums, and to me, I believe their work belongs there. And so, it was an honor to share their work. And I just, they just, all of them have such different things that they contribute, and sort of expand the sort of idea of what we might think of when we think of an indigenous work.
Yeah, that's great. So yeah, you have many roles in the art community, and you're an artist and also a curator. So how did that kind of affect your curatorial view of the show, being an artist yourself? And then would you mind telling us about your artwork?
Yeah, so I'm first and foremost an artist. I am a maker, I'm a painter, I love to paint. And so for me, I'm, you know, thinking about the I think about the complexity of life always. And so from a curator perspective, like that's what made the show, I think, so interesting is that I tried to illustrate the complexity, I think, of Indigenous life, which one absolutely is rooted in history every day. I wake up and worry what my grandmother or my great-great-grandmother might think of my actions. You know, not everybody thinks about their ancestors when they're making a painting or when they're, you know, when they're going about their day, but that's very much a part of Indigenous life. And so as a curator, I have to think constantly about my community and think about how I include them and give them space to share and be heard and not just take up space for myself as an artist, which is super important as well. Like, even though I do my own thing as an artist, I also want to be creating opportunities for artists to connect with each other, because ultimately community is such a huge part of being an artist. And so this was a neat opportunity as a curator to bring all of these disparate artists together. A lot of them I either knew through a network or I met via social media calls for art. And it's so wild. I met all of these Indigenous people in Portland that I didn't even know existed through Instagram. It was
That's so cool.
Actually, Instagram has this really powerful network of Native creatives on there. And I've just connected with so many people on there. And some of the people that are in that show that were curated from that show have become really good friends of mine. And so I just feel really honored, because not every show that a curator makes, I'm sure they don't always come out with great friends or feel like they were honoring their family and those things. So for me, it was a great opportunity, not only as an artist, but just as like an Indigenous person to show respect and gratitude to those people, my elders, as well as those who have come before us who are not here anymore. But yeah, it's just an incredible opportunity as an artist generally, because all I do normally is make paintings. So to get to help other artists, you know, see the light with their art and have other people see that, have students see it, have students be educated about the Indigenous communities that they're around. That to me, like, wow, most shows don't get to do that. So honestly, my show was so multifaceted and had so many components to it that I feel very blessed to have been a part of it and to have asked to contribute to it. And it's extremely unique exhibition for sure.
Yeah, before I forget, there is a current iteration that folks could see in person right now, which is that they are the images from the show printed on yard signs and placed. So can you tell us a little bit about that idea and kind of like the returning the work to the land in a way? Where can people see this right now?
Yeah, so there are a couple of communities. I know there's one in, I think it's either Forest Grove or Hillsboro. I think it's listed on the museum website. And then there's also one in Northeast Portland right now. But you can actually sign up to host your own museum if you want. Just go to the museum website. Basically, Five Oaks created a yard sign version of the exhibition so that people could place it in their yards, but they could also place it in their windows. And it would be a way to let people know that, one, they're on Calipoyan land, but also on that sign. So the one side of the sign says, this is Calipoyan land, but the other side will feature different artists from the exhibition with a QR code where you can go and learn more about that artist as well as the exhibition. And it's cool because the museum not only is doing this yard sign thing, but they've gone and digitized the whole exhibition online so that you can actually go and see the panels online that I edited and look at all of the changes that I made and really sort of get an idea of the exhibition, even though you can't be there right now at the museum.
And you recently did just wrapping up an Instagram takeover for the museum. And so one of my favorite bits that you included were some of your inspirations and things like that. So where can people find more information about you on Instagram?
Yeah, so I'm one of those people who live on social media basically, and I don't have a website. So if you want to find me, go on Instagram, or I'm also on Facebook as well. But Instagram is where I mainly post all of my new work, and you can find me. My handle there is @artnerdforever, and all spelled out, no numbers. But yeah, that's where you can catch all of my new work and keep up with all the projects that I'm doing, like my national fellowship this summer with NOAA Fisheries. So
yes, yeah, perfect. I would love to, just before we wrap up, would you mind telling us a little bit about that coming up, since you're doing that through the pandemic, so your fellowship?
Yeah, so I'm very excited. I was selected by the ACAD group of schools and NOAA Fisheries to be their 2020 National Fellow. And so I am going on an artist fellowship here actually in about 2 weeks. I'm going to be in Northern California, basically doing a self-guided trip of Northern California to learn about the Shasta watershed and the Yuba watershed, and learn about the declining salmon populations there and NOAA's efforts to save them before they sort of go extinct. Unfortunately, it looks like within the next decade they will lose their Chinook salmon population. And so I'm going to be learning about that and also helping them to build a public education campaign around that for the people in the Central Valley of California, and let them know that their fish are there and they're dying, and they maybe don't even know that they have fish in their environment, but there are a diverse amount of salmonid species there, including steelhead and the Chinook that run, and unfortunately due to climate change and changes that the Trump administration has made recently in their regulatory powers, NOAA is unable to sort of bring the hammer down on a lot of these industries and water users. And so they're having to recruit artists to help educate the public because they no longer have the sort of power that they had before. And so we're sort of having to employ the emotions of the public to help, you know, help the salmon survive this time and hopefully not blink out of existence. So yeah, it's a big job, and it's obviously a utopian, you know, idea to think that artists can end the problem, but hell, I'm going to try. So
you know, it's good work. It's good work. And it's the power of art, you know, like it's been shown to work before. So, you know, that's right. Well, Steph, yeah, thank you so much. I so appreciate
it. You're
welcome. You've been listening to Art Focus with Amanda Clem on KBOO Community Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM. Today we were talking with Steph Littlefoot Fogel about her exhibition, This is Kalapuyan Land, at the Five Oaks Museum. You can find out more information and actually look through most of the materials from the show on the website, fiveoaksmuseum.org. That's five spelled out. Thank you so much for listening.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall.